Against a background of blue sky and clouds, film studio buildings are reflected in a gleaming gold band which fits snugly around a shield containing the letters WB, the Warner Brothers Pictures logo, a Time Warner Entertainment company. Silver V-shaped strips of diminishing size sit inside each other, forming a large V which is streaked with a shaft of burnt orange. Village Roadshow Pictures. The Earth, then Mars, the red planet, are viewed from space as they slowly revolve.
By the year 2000, we had begun to overpopulate, pollute, and poison our planet faster than we could clean it up. We ignored the problem for as long as we could, but we were kidding ourselves. By 2025, we knew we were in trouble and began to desperately search for a new home. Mars. For the last 20 years, we've been sending unmanned probes with algae, bioengineered to grow there and produce oxygen. We're going to build ourselves an atmosphere we can breathe. And for 20 years, it seemed to work. It looked like we pulled it off. We'd done it. Then, all of a sudden, oxygen levels started to drop. We don't know why.
Mars, its surface now pale green, evanesces. Glowing red capitals fade to white and disappear. Red planet. A sleek white space shuttle with upswept wings cruises towards a space station orbiting the Earth and docks.
The international community has thrown all of its resources behind us. It's the greatest undertaking man has ever attempted. Our ship, Mars One, is too massive to launch from the surface of the planet, and we've shuttled here to the high orbit space station for a low gravity launch to begin our 6-month trip. The first manned mission to Mars. The hope and survival of mankind rests on us.
The shuttle's bay doors open and a coupling port rises to connect with a docking arm that extends from the space station.
But I know we'll solve the problem, because the best scientific minds are going there to figure out the answer. And I'm leading the mission. I'm Bowman, pilot and mission commander. Chantilis, chief science officer and the soul of the crew. Santin, a hothead but a fine co-pilot. Gallagher, our mechanical systems engineer. Maintenance. Frankly, not my first choice.
Silver doors bearing the letters UISA open and the spacesuited crew stroll through.
The two civilian members of the team are Birchnell, one of the world's leading bioengineers and his own greatest hero. Pettengill, terraforming expert and last-minute replacement on the science team. And packed away in her box, Amy. Autonomous mapping, exploration, and evasion. A multitask robot on loan from the Marines. In other words, our Mars surface navigator. We're the first travelers to another planet. It's another giant leap for mankind. And if we don't figure out what's wrong on Mars, it could be our last.
A burst of flame from rocket engines briefly fills the screen as a spacecraft blasts off. Viewed from the space station, the craft rapidly merges with the speckled blackness of space. Directed by Anthony Hoffman. Attractive Commander Bowman, short dark-haired Ted Santin, and stubbled Chip Pettengill are on the flight deck.
Alpha Mac indicator.
Clear.
Confirmed. That concludes the primary systems checklist, Commander.
Thanks, Lucille.
You are welcome.
Gentlemen, take over.
So can't believe we're doing this.
Just keep it automatic, follow the routine.
Secondary systems, OHS, RCS.
Clear.
RCS. Confirmed.
Optical alignment sight.
Offsite. Rate 19.
Clear.
Confirmed.
How many hits did you get on your website yesterday, Pettengill?
Oh,
I got 500,000.
That's great.
How many did you get?
ATU 13.6 degrees.
832.
Were they all from your mother?
Yeah.
Day 93, Mars One glides through space. Santin, Pettengill, Chantilis, and Gallagher are at a table in the mess.
You know, it's strange.
It's gone. Yesterday I could see it, today I looked and I couldn't find it.
So what, you think the Earth just vanished? It's gone forever?
No, I'm saying it's weird not being able to see it.
Yeah, so it's weird.
You'll get over it.
Or you won't.
Santin leaves.
Just something I wasn't expecting, that's all.
Balding, gray-haired Dr. Chantilis.
Gallagher, up for a couple of turns around the campus?
Leaving, Chantilla stumps Pettengill playfully on the shoulder. Blonde, spiky-haired Gallagher goes with him.
Grandfather taught me to sail when I was a kid. Taught me to read the stars.
just in case all the GPS satellites fell out of the sky, he said. He said, any man who puts his life in the hands of a bunch of batteries is an idiot.
A real Yankee.
No, he just wouldn't have approved something he couldn't build with his hands. He wouldn't have approved of this.
Going to Mars?
He'd say we were headed for trouble.
Say we didn't try. We just finished poisoning the Earth, and everyone was dead in 100 years. Then what was the point of any of it? Art, beauty, all gone. The Greeks, the Constitution. People dying for freedom, ideas. None of it meant anything. And what about religion? Could we give up on God, too?
You didn't just give up being a scientist one day, did you?
I realized science couldn't answer any of the really interesting questions. So I turned to philosophy, been searching for God ever since.
Gallagher gazes thoughtfully at Chantilis. Mars 1, day 144. In her quarters, Bowman wipes a mirror clean, then washes her face. Santon arrives in a sweat and towels himself dry.
Hey, you're talking to a classroom of second graders from Iowa at 14:30.
Wait a minute, it's your turn to do the kiddies.
Oh, no, it is your turn and you know it. Besides, I outrank you. I could order you to do it.
Yeah, just because they promote faster in the Navy.
Of course they promote faster. You have to when you're dealing with the best people. 14:30 with a smile on your face.
This mean you're pulling rank for the shower, too?
No, not rank. Gender. Ladies first.
Santon leaves. Later, Bowman is standing in a tube-like shower unit rinsing her hair. An automatic door opens and Gallagher enters the washroom just as Bowman emerges from the shower naked.
Hey, could you pass me the towel, please?
Bowman regards him unflinchingly. Gallagher's uncomfortable.
Sure. Sorry.
Just pretend I'm your sister.
She shrugs. Gallagher smiles.
I have two sisters. They don't look like you.
This only works if we both believe it doesn't matter.
So I should pretend you're virginal.
Well, you could make it matter more than that.
Okay, why don't we practice? You can get back in the shower naked and come out and I'll pretend it doesn't matter.
He smiles warmly. Bowman studies him, then narrows her eyes.
Why don't you go fix something?
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
Smiling, Bowman goes. Gallagher leaves the way he came. Santon and Pettengill are in a corridor. Gallagher arrives in a lift.
Meph systems check.
I'll be on the flight deck with Bowman.
Yep, sure.
500,000.
832.
Tighten up.
Santon play punches Gallagher.
You ready, boys?
Yeah.
Santon takes the lift.
Gotta hate him. It's like high school.
Yeah, there's the jocks and then us. You watch my back, I'll watch yours.
You want to help me with Amy?
Okay.
It's time for a pre-launch diagnostic check.
They take robot Amy out of a sealed compartment.
Hang on, who are you kidding? You're a jock. You did the NASCAR circuit, right?
Yeah, I was just tuning cars. Wasn't really jack stuff. It's heavy.
Ears are still ringing.
Gallagher goes to a spacesuit.
What is it that powers this thing?
A helium nuclear power cell. It's the size of a beer can and it runs her for 8 months.
Gallagher unfastens a glove from the spacesuit and puts it on. On the arm of the glove is a screen which Gallagher activates. Amy rises to her full height and now resembles a robot dog.
Hey, sweetie.
Sweetie? Is she a navigator or your girlfriend?
Been a long flight.
Certainly has. It's looking good. Let's check your TA.
The screen on Gallagher's glove shows an image of the two men in the room from Amy's onboard camera. Inside the camera looking out, the image is green and a caption reads, Navigation Mode.
Tighten up.
Pettengill assumes a fighting pose.
So military removed your reflexes before they transferred her, huh?
That should make her your kind of girl.
Gallagher smirks, then crouches down in front of Amy and takes out a pen-like object.
Got him like a fish.
He gives the object to Amy, then presses a button underneath a rising panel. Amy's internal display changes to red, military mode.
Kill him.
Amy lunges at Pettengill with the object and he stiffens, his eyes widening. He discovers a red pen line down his chest.
That's my kind of girl.
Gallagher smirks.
It's real damn funny, Gallagher.
Gallagher, this activity is strictly prohibited in this area.
She could have hurt me.
Cease immediately.
Yeah, took away her knife, but inside she's all green beret. Right back in navigator mode.
You're gonna dig Mars, Amy.
Mars 1, day 168.
So have a good time, and I hope to see you back down here on Earth real soon. Good luck. We miss you. Bye.
209 web messages remaining.
Hey, Teddy, you remember me? Sure hope you haven't forgotten your old friends now that you're a big hotshot astronaut. Anyway, just wanted to let you know I was thinking about you.
In a lab, crop-haired Dr. Quinn Birchinell is conducting an experiment.
Commander, I sense an irregular humidity mixture.
Birchinell does a double take at a computer screen. Gallagher hurries out of the lab to meet Bowman.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine. As soon as someone explains to me why there's an indicator on the flight deck saying that the temperature in here is above normal. About 10 degrees.
Fahrenheit or centigrade?
Unimpressed, Bowman pushes past Gallagher and into the lab. Gallagher follows her.
You teach me about biology. I've developed an interest in...
Fermentation?
Rumbled, Gallagher looks down.
A billion taxpayer dollars in this mission, and you're using the lab equipment as a still?
No. I'm sterilizing.
Uh-huh. And how do you propose that I explain to Houston...
Birchinell reaches for a small glass beaker of clear liquid. Bowman sees him and he backs off.
The two of my crew went blind drinking moonshine vodka.
Gallagher considers.
Very carefully.
Birchinell cracks up, but his smile fades when Bowman stares at him. Her gaze has the same effect on Gallagher's smirk.
So what, doesn't this establishment serve women?
Birchinell raises his eyebrows.
Allow me.
He pours a small beaker for the commander.
Bowman?
The commander downs the clear liquid in one.
Woo!
Birchinell seems surprised.
I learned how to drink in the Navy, boys.
Birchinell drinks from the bottle and Gallagher from a beaker. In the mess, Birchinell holds court.
Chantilus, there were frogs around when you were a kid, right?
Lots.
And then we killed them. Every last one. Now, since frogs breathe through their skins, they react to the toxins in the environment more rapidly. That should have been a warning. Don't you think?
What's your point?
Man's a party animal. If he's doing okay, nothing else matters. That's not going to change.
Unless there are larger forces at work than biology.
Uh-oh. We're going to talk about God now, aren't we? Because if we are, I'm going to need another pop.
Not God. Faith.
Faith? Oh, I had a girlfriend named Faith. She cheated on me with a girl named Chastity.
The others laugh.
You wouldn't be riding 309 million kilometers into outer space and back in a rocket ship that nobody ever tested properly without having a little faith.
Smiling, Birchinell points at Chantilus, acknowledging his point.
Listen, let's forget all the hypotheticals for a second, okay? I say, to hell with humanity. I say, Commander Bowman, when we get to Mars, we just take it. We just take it over for ourselves.
Call Earth, tell them it sucks, and don't bother coming?
Yeah, whatever keeps out the riffraff. Chantilus, you know, you can do the religion thing. You, Gallagher, you can, you know, keep the space John working, and Pettengill's passed out, and I can handle pretty much everything else, you know. King.
What about me?
All four men look at her.
Well, you'll be my queen.
Bowman gazes unresponsively at Birchinell, who grins.
Propagation of the species.
Getting no reaction from Bowman, Birchinell's grin fades a little. Gallagher turns to look at the commander, who smiles faintly at him before getting up and leaving the room.
It's just a joke, Commander Bowman, who said.
Chantilus.
And on that note, gentlemen, I suggest we retire.
February 5, 2057.
Mars 1, Houston. You have acquired orbit. Congratulations on 182 days of smooth sailing, and welcome to Mars. Houston out.
Mars 1 orbits the pale red planet. The spacecraft has a slim head section the shape of an octagon. Behind this is a communication shaft acting as a hub for two large wheels with glowing white lights, which revolve in different directions. The rear of the ship consists of striped fins resembling windmill sails, with a letterbox-shaped rocket blaster at their centre. Gallagher stands nodding his head. Chantilus sits calmly, his hands clasped together. Pettengill and Birchenell are in the lab, Santon and Bowman are on the flight deck. Everyone wears an earpiece. Gallagher looks through a porthole.
Did you find a good parking space?
Yep, right between Phobos and Deimos.
Gallagher's sporting shades.
I prefer one moon, you know? That way you know what to call it. The moon.
More color commentary from the janitor.
The correct term is mechanical systems engineer.
But he will accept space janitor.
What the hell with the chit-chat? After 6 months, I'm ready to get out of this hamster cage. Come on. What do you say, Bowman?
Lucille, initiate all pre-launch systems checks.
Yes, Commander.
Finally.
We're eating dinner on Mars.
Sounds good to me.
Santon gets up from one of the pilot's chairs. On a screen on the flight deck, an image of HAB, the Mars base.
Mars entry vehicle launch in 2 hours. HAB 3D model online.
It'll be nice to live on the ground for a change.
Orbit status of 16.
Even if we are exchanging one hamster cage for another.
If all's gone well, hydroponics have been online for 6 months. We'll have fresh tomatoes tonight. That's one requirement for my dream house.
Well, I bet you'll want a white picket fence, right?
Yep, I wouldn't mind. Lucille, are we close enough to see our new home?
Yes, Commander.
A dome on the underside of the ship opens and a camera focuses on Mars.
Locking in on HAB. LZ-56.
Sure is desperate.
A bright light, control panels flash.
Gamma burst.
Latch up, free flow. We lose tip, shut it down.
Shut it down
now. SCP, some kind of massive solar flare, come on.
Level 5 EMP.
Explosions occur in different parts of the ship. A passageway goes dark and dim blue emergency lights come on. Gallagher and Pettengill run.
Whoa, radiation alert, safe area, go, guys, go!
Emergency corridor bulbs shatter.
You too, Lieutenant?
I'm not going anywhere. You need me up here on the flight deck.
I want you back there, now.
Santon stays put.
Lieutenant, now, go!
Massive gamma ray penetration, Commander.
Santon reluctantly leaves. Pettengill and Gallagher get into a lift. They're joined by Birchenell, Santon, and Chantilis, who are pursued by a wall of flame. The lift doors close just in time. The men cast anxious looks at each other as the dimly illuminated lift rises. Small explosions are occurring throughout the ship. Cables and circuitry catch fire, and some of the clean white living quarters sparks fill the air. On the flight deck, Bowman is pressing buttons on a seemingly dead control panel. In the lift, the men grow increasingly concerned. Back on the flight deck...
The solar flare has passed, Commander.
Standing in gloomy grey light, Bowman breathes a sigh of relief. A dusty orange haze above the planet's surface subsides.
Power levels are below operating minimums.
The men enter a room. Santon presses buttons on a screen, which then reads, shut down.
Santon?
Yeah, Bowman, we copy. We're all okay. What's the damage to the ship?
Oh, we're dead in the water.
Main power unit offline.
She's holding it together now, but she could fall apart at any moment.
Auxiliary power unit failure. Power level still dropping. Primary systems will shut down in 6 minutes.
Change of plans, boys. We're launching now. Suit up. I'll secure the ship. I'm gonna try to get more systems online, and then I'll join you.
The men put on their spacesuits.
Chantilis, suit voice activated. Gallagher, suit voice activated.
Power level still down. Primary systems will shut down in 5 minutes.
Suit computer online. Dr. Birchenell, your EDA systems are 100%.
On the flight deck, Bowman presses buttons on a panel and systems are activated.
MedLP lock.
Gallagher climbs up through a hatch and joins the others. They all clamp themselves into seats arranged in a circle. Chantilis smiles nervously. Santon has screens and a console in front of him.
Commence med system check. AGF online. Aperture kit motor online. Anti-inertial thrusters initialized.
The men are inside a capsule connected to the top of the front portion of the spacecraft.
Got the auto launch program online. I'm arming it now.
Clock D-lock 9K Ogan. IMU online. DCM flat. ABVI engaged. Launch release system not responding.
That's not good.
No, it isn't.
Okay, let's try it another way.
LRS not responding.
Bowman pulls a lever, which jumps back.
Failure to engage.
Come on!
Launch release system not responding.
Lieutenant Santon, suit seal 100%. Air supply 100%.
Ignition system go. Met landing system check.
White jets shoot out from beneath the capsule, but nothing happens.
I'm sorry. Launch release system not responding.
Okay, guys. Listen up. The MEV's not supplying power to the launch release system. I'm gonna have to stay back and arm it manually.
The men share wary looks.
Commander, with all due respect, we're not leaving without you.
Hey, it's not up for debate.
Cut the auto guidance system and try to reboot the arm.
No, we don't have time. Santon, you're in charge. I hope you like the saddle. Lock it up, gentlemen.
Lieutenant Santon, MEV launch systems ready. Launch on your command.
Crew secure.
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 The MEV guidance system is scanning for the HAT transponder. MEV launch sequence initiated.
We're green across the board.
Boosters online. Simulating D-tanks.
Gotta hope she makes it.
Commander, primary system shut down in 50 seconds.
Bowman manages to pull the lever into position. Most but not all of the cables connecting the capsule to the ship blast free.
Launch!
In the MEV capsule, two glowing red release buttons are pinched and turn green. Bertinel grits his teeth and braces himself. The capsule's anchoring arms release their grip on the mothership and the small craft floats free. It suddenly rockets at great speed towards the red planet. On the flight deck of Mars One, Bowman shakes her head as if to wake herself up. MEV hurtles into the Martian atmosphere.
Auto-guided systems out. Claire must have cooked the ship.
I thought MEV was shielded.
Complain later. I'm going to manual flight.
Gallagher gawps. Santon, his gloved hand shaking, fights against the G-forces to grasp two joysticks. On a screen, a targeting guidance grid appears over the surface of the planet. Flames pour from MEV as it plows through the atmosphere. In Mars One, Bowman sits in a pilot's chair.
Commander, 5 seconds.
A series of glowing dials change from green to red.
Primary system shut down.
The spaceship's two large wheels cease revolving. On the flight deck...
Artificial gravity failure.
Shit.
We have an electrical fire in Access Loop 4 and a snowboarding in Sphere 6.
Large globules of red liquid rise up out of a tube. Bowman floats away from them. MEV, engulfed in a cloak of flame, plummets towards Mars. Santon grimaces as he tries to hold on to the joysticks. Drifting through the communication shaft, Bowman locates a fire extinguisher.
Later, Lucille.
She points the extinguisher at some flames. Blue liquid shoots out and she's thrown backwards, banging into the wall of the shaft.
This is a zero-gravity fire, Commander.
Inside MEV...
Deploying chutes!
Two canopies open up, slowing the capsule's fall. In the Mars One communication shaft...
Snowboarding in Sphere 6. Brace yourself this time.
Bowman does so and successfully extinguishes a small fire.
Commander, we have additional fires in Spheres 3 and 5.
In MEV, Santon...
We're off target. Terrain's crappy. I'm dumping the landing gear. Amy's in there. No choice.
The undercarriage is jettisoned and the many-sided capsule continues its parachute-aided descent. The MEV crew are pressed into their seats. On Mars One, Bowman floats down the dark, smoky communication shaft. She reaches a hatch and opens it.
We now have fire in Spheres 3, 7, and 8.
Bowman pulls herself through the hatch and grabs something. Inside MEV...
I'm deploying bags.
Hexagonal panels on the many-sided capsule fly off and white airbags inflate. In Mars One, Bowman has a portable screen.
Systems indicate increasing air toxicity.
She makes a beeline for her spacesuit. MEV approaches the surface of Mars. Gallagher.
Here comes your 19th nervous breakdown.
MEV lands on the dry mountainous terrain and bounces on its airbag, shaking the crew inside. The capsule, which looks like a giant BlackBerry, soars up high. It comes crashing down, bouncing again a few times, then rolling along the dusty red Martian ground, shedding its two parachutes as it goes. Completely concealed by the airbags, MEV tumbles on, then slows and comes to a stop. Momentarily wedged in a crevice, the airbag-covered capsule rolls on and plummets down the side of a deep, rocky canyon. It hits a ledge on the way down. An airbag punctures and two of the men's chairs are thrust forward. MEV wheels on. MEV rolls down a sheer rock face, glancing off the sharp edge of a large outcrop. The men whose chairs have come loose are being thrown about like rag dolls and the others badly shaken. Mev travels over flat ground and bounces over a pointed pillar of rock. A crewman's chair is steaming. The capsule gradually slows and comes to a halt. The airbags deflate. In Mars One, Bowman has got into her spacesuit and helmet. She pulls the visor down.
Flames now consume 80% of the ship. This exceeds our fire extinguishing capacity.
Flames race through a shaft, then bounce off a surface and lick at Bowman's space boots as she floats towards an emergency evacuation unit, a chair which is fixed to a wall. The chair sparks and flames shoot past close to the commander, who lifts two harness arms, then maneuvers herself into the chair and brings the arms down over her. She puts her boots onto clamps which secure them in place. Bowman grits her teeth, then pulls a lever back. A hatch in the ship's outer hull opens and the flames are sucked out of it into space, along with anything else that's not tied down. Bowman's chair breaks free, but a mooring cable on the back prevents it from escaping. Flames and debris whiz past Bowman, buffeting her chair. Her eyes are closed and jaw clenched. Viewed from outside the ship, the flames spew from the hatch in a tiny jet. Waves of smoke drift into the void. The last of the flames exit the ship, leaving Bowman wide-eyed.
All fires are extinguished. O to level 0%.
Bowman's chair drifts about in the now empty chamber. She tugs on the long cable and drifts slowly back to the hatch lever, which she yanks down. Doors close over the hatch. Bowman is trembling from the shock. On Mars, the near-empty airbags flap in the strong wind and dust swirls in the air. Mev's hatch door is ejected and skids along the red earth. Two boots emerge from the capsule. Gallagher drops heavily to the ground in his spacesuit and helmet. He regains his balance, then gazes out across the barren, hostile Martian landscape. In the distant haze, way beyond the canyon, rise low foothills, which are dominated by a range of tall, jagged peaks. Gallagher and Santon help Chantilus out.
Okay.
Take them easy.
Okay.
Help him up.
Let's sit down for a minute.
Nice and easy.
They set their comrade down on the ground, and he leans feebly to one side. The other two climb out.
Terra Mars Alpha, compiling mission itinerary.
You don't appear to have any compound fractures. Doesn't look like you broke anything.
Mars One flies above the red planet. Bowman's working on a power control column.
Reserve power supplies are failing. Auxiliary power unit 20%.
Reroute the main power supply through the B-chip, Lucille.
This violates operating parameters, Commander.
I'm not going to take no for an answer. You got that? Do it! Now!
Yes, Commander. Alpha processor discharged. Power unit to beta chip. Main power unit 15%.
Bowman slots a component from her suit into a socket.
Main power unit restored. Well done, Commander.
Bowman throws a lever on the power control column and the spacecraft's two giant wheels light up and begin to turn again. Bowman and all the other floating objects hit the floor.
Artificial gravity restored.
Bowman spins a dial.
Artificial atmosphere systems restored. Up to level 2% and increasing.
An electronic map.
Where the hell is Hab? If you hadn't dumped our navigator, we'd know. Can't get a visual on Amy, but maybe I can fix this radio.
How long?
I don't know. These repairs are gonna take a while.
Science package is KO'd also.
There goes the mission. Mission's not over yet, Pettingill.
Oh, really? Did you miss something? We lost the science package. We can no longer achieve what we came here for.
Quit whining.
You did park us on the rocks, Mr. Santon.
And you knew there were risks.
And right now, gentlemen, locating Hab is what matters.
Exterior atmosphere indicators disabled.
I think we're somewhere downrange.
Calculating landing ellipse.
Based on our last uncorrupted nav state, I'd say we're somewhere in this 60 by 120 kilometer ellipse.
All the mission data is in here. We just gotta close in on the downrange variables. It's about the math.
This is it. That moment they told us about in high school, where one day algebra would save our lives.
Shut up.
Sorry.
Synopsis warning. Amy not responding. Mars One comm initiation unsuccessful.
Chantilus holds an electronic screen up to his belly.
T-ray imaging.
The screen displays his insides. A message in red reads, spleen damage. Chantillus glumly lowers the screen. Gallagher is walking alone ahead of the other uninjured men. He stops on a ridge and looks out at the cathedrals of rock rising up out of the reddish sand.
Oh, man.
The other three arrive. Gallagher pulls open a flexible screen.
System memory, bring up a panoramic shot from the hab.
Ocular Mag 1X panoramic mode.
Reverse.
Downrange charging.
Gallagher wobbles the shiny-backed screen.
Hey, guys, look at this.
What, Gallagher?
I don't think it's about the math. I think it's about the picture.
What picture?
This one.
We're not in that picture. If we were, we'd know where Hab was, which we're trying to figure out.
I know, but look. If this rock is Hab, and it's in a line about 30 degrees, it sees these two peaks there, but reverse, because it's on the other side. And then about 180 degrees, it sees those two peaks, which puts us in a line about here, which makes the line to Hab about there.
He's right. Nice work, space janitor.
We only have 7.5 hours of air left. Let's get moving.
Gallagher retrieves the map screen and heads off with the other three. Back at the capsule, Chantillus sits leaning against a large boulder. He looks down and picks up a small dark stone, then places it on the sandy ground on his other side. He then proceeds to draw a circle in the sand around the stone with his forefinger. He finishes the operation and looks up with a pensive expression.
I realized science couldn't answer any of the really interesting questions. So I turned to philosophy. Been searching for God ever since. Who knows? I may pick up a rock and it'll say underneath, made by God. The universe is full of surprises.
That would be a big one.
Chantillus recalls talking to Gallagher on board Mars One. The men return.
You ready, sir?
Chantillus lifts his eyes.
Unfortunately, I'm staying here.
What?
My spleen's ruptured. There's significant internal bleeding. I wouldn't get very far.
But we have emergency medical gear at Hab. We can lock out the spine impulse. You can walk us through the surgery.
Carrying me will slow you all down, just enough to deplete everyone's oxygen. This is no time for misguided heroics.
I'm not gonna let you die here.
What we came here to do is more important. The four of you must carry on with a mission. It won't be easy, but I know you can do it. Get going.
Santon's in two minds. Chantillus nods and Santon nods back.
You heard the man.
Without flinching, Santon rises to his feet and tramps away, Pettingill leaving with him. Kneeling beside Chantillus, Birchinal pats his colleague on the arm, then gets up and follows the other two. Gallagher is left kneeling with Chantillus.
Hey, I got to see Mars.
Gallagher smiles weakly at Chantillus, then rises and starts to go. Plodding away, he stops and turns round. Behind his helmet visor, Chantillus smiles warmly and nods. Gallagher turns and walks on after the other crew members. Alone, Chantillus now looks scared. He peers down at his abdomen. Santon, Pettingill, Birchinal and Gallagher, in their heavy spacesuits, trudge across crumbling red earth that resembles the dry bed of a river. Later, viewed from a distance, the four men walk side by side across a flat plain strewn with jagged stones. The wind blows up a dust cloud behind them. On Mars One...
Come on, give me a red light. Give me juice. Come on, don't do this to me and my team. Give me a goddamn red light.
Communications online.
See, all you needed was an attitude check.
Thank you, Commander.
Mars Grand Crew, this is Mars One. Can you hear me? Over.
She flicks a switch.
Mars Ground Crew, this is Mars One. Do you copy? Over.
A small LED on her earpiece flashes green. On Mars.
Terra scan has nothing to report. No life form trace apparent.
It's weird. There's nothing here.
It's Mars.
No, I mean, there's not one sign of the algae we sent up here. Even if it all died, there should be something. A dried algal mat, traces on the lee side, something.
He's right. They're not just dead. They're gone like it was scoured off. This says there was nothing ever here. That's impossible.
Maybe there was never anything in this valley.
If we are where we think we are, this whole area was covered with blue algae as recently as a month ago.
Valley before this should have been blazing with red-orange chloroflectic.
All right, all this talking's burning up oxygen. Let's move out.
At least we know what happened to the oxygen. There's nothing here to
personal.
Make it.
You done? I said move out.
Pattengill and Birchenell share a look, then traipse off following Santon's lead. Mev's undercarriage sits lodged in the earth where it landed. A hatch door shoots off the side of the undercarriage, pushed by two robotic feet. Amy flips out through the hatch, then takes a few tentative steps, her four legs stiff at first. On Amy's internal screen, a command reads, "Dispatching search drone. Locate Mars 1 ground crew." Amy arches her back, a canister opens and twin propellers pop out. The drone flies away. On Mars 1...
Commander, 10 minutes until we exit the day side.
Okay, where are the boys?
Group tracking, T-lock.
The camera on the ship's underside provides Bowman with data.
Okay, no, it's
L's in topographies. 6 degrees tracking. 3 minutes tracking. L T-lock. Mev landing zone, LZ-56.
Why aren't you at the LZ?
Bowman stands in front of a touchscreen which displays the contours of the red planet as if viewed from the satellite. She presses grid squares on the screen to search different quadrants. On Mars, the four crew members are making their way through a deep gorge. Gallagher stops and picks up one of the many sharp-sided rocks lying at his feet. He studies its rough brown surfaces, then walks on, still holding it.
5 minutes until we exit the day side and lose visuals. 144S. Azimuth
HZ 4.99. Boys, where are you?
Mev LP lock.
The touchscreen image zooms in on Mev and the deflated airbags, then Chantilis sitting still.
Find Hab for me, Lucille.
On Mars, the four men walk in single file across a vast, gently undulating expanse of bare earth. In the foreground, small creatures scuttle along. Seeing something glint way ahead, Gallagher stops.
There it is!
We made it.
26 months of food, air, and water. We made it!
The quartet runs in the direction of Hab. On Mars 1, Bowman is at the touchscreen frantically searching for her companions. She zooms in on the remains of a metal-framed tower building. Different-sized pieces of torn, shiny silver material are littered about the damaged structure. Commander Bowman gawps at the image in disbelief, then turns the screen off and hangs her head. On the red planet, the four men stop jogging and stare ahead in exhausted horror.
God help us.
They venture into the wreckage of the Mars base, Hab. The main tower, stripped of its reflective outer layer, stands bare, parts of its metal structure having been torn away. Twisted metal juts out of the earth.
It's all chewed up.
Pattengill, then Gallagher and Santon.
What happened?
Ice Storm couldn't have done this.
No way. Every half stood up to an F5 in Tornado Alley.
This isn't weather-related.
Okay. What are we gonna do?
Start looking for O2.
Commander Bowman is on the dimly lit flight deck of the mothership.
Houston, this is Mars 1. We have experienced a massive proton field upset sequel to a solar flare. Mars 1 systems at below 70%, orbital path degraded by fire control air purge. Engine function zero.
On planet Mars, Birchenell is searching the gutted interior of the Hab Tower on the flight deck of Mars 1.
Mev launched with a crew of five. I have visual on crash site. I can see one person down. I have absolutely no radio contact with them. Houston, visuals confirm that Hab 1 is Tango uniform. I repeat, Hab 1 has been destroyed.
On Mars, Gallagher and Santon wait anxiously by the Hab Tower. Commander Bowman looks downbeat.
Even if the rest of the team is alive, they have no way to survive. I'm uploading telemetry and video data to you now.
She presses an icon on a screen.
Data unit relay.
The mothership slips effortlessly through space. Below on Mars, Birchenell emerges empty-handed from Hab.
I don't see anything.
No food, no air, no water.
Okay, what? What are we gonna do?
Nothing we can do. We're out of time.
We're out of time when we're out of air.
16 minutes. What do you got left?
A little less.
Some final entry for the bio, huh? Disappointed 12 billion people? Not counting the ex-wives?
On Mars 1, Commander Bowman strides down a short corridor where jets of smoky white gas are escaping through the floor and into the mess. Holding a glowing yellow light panel and some transparent plastic sheets, she sits down at the table, which is covered in shards of broken glass. She brushes the glass off the table, then stares at her hand. Later, in front of a mirror, she uses tweezers to extract some glass from her knuckle. The glass pops out, spraying the mirror with blood. At Hab, Birchinal holds court.
Mars's polar ice is mostly CO2. We use low-order nuclear detonations to melt the ice. That releases CO2. CO2 buildup creates a greenhouse effect. Mars starts to warm up. Now, when it's hot enough, we feed down some algae. Now, the algae grows and emits oxygen.
Birchinal seems to struggle for breath, then peers at Gallagher, who wearily closes his eyes.
You want me to just shut up and let you die quietly?
Kind of peaceful.
Okay. So, they sent us here to figure out what happened to the oxygen. The question is, what happened to the algae? You know?
Gallagher shuts his eyes again. Pettengill traipses back into the wreckage of Hab. Gallagher opens his eyes and frowns at the new arrival.
Sam's dead. Threw himself off a cliff. Tried to stop him.
Gallagher and Birchinal are sitting down. Pettengill walks past them and stands staring into the distance. Birchinal steadily draws breath.
Gallagher, replace your O2 canister immediately.
Under a minute. What's it gonna be like?
Hypoxia? Dizziness? Skin will tingle? Vision narrows? Then shock, convulsions, acidosis.
Is it gonna hurt?
Yeah.
Gallagher starts to move.
I'm gonna go over here. Take a walk.
Gallagher, oxygen supply depleted.
Gallagher's on his feet. Pettengill looks round in alarm. Gallagher gulps for air, then sinks to his knees.
Gallagher?
Gallagher struggles to his feet again. Pettengill looks away and closes his eyes. Gallagher grasps the base of his helmet. He drops to the ground and crawls along. Birchinal watches with a look of anguish. Pettengill shuddering with trepidation. Gallagher pulls himself along on hands and knees, his face contorted and mouth gaping.
Birchinal, replace your O2 canister immediately.
Birchinal winces. Gallagher climbs to his knees, clutching the base of his helmet where it joins the spacesuit. His back to Gallagher, Pettengill starts breathing more quickly. Gallagher topples to the earth. Pettengill's panicking. Gallagher grimaces and squeezes his eyes shut, his head shaking and body convulsing. Birchinal watches, powerless.
Pettengill, replace your O2 canister immediately.
Pettengill stares out numbly through his visor. Gallagher slaps his hand on a small silver plate on his helmet. His visor slides up. Lying with his head on the ground, he blinks as sand is blown into his face.
I can breathe. I can breathe. Purge. Purge. It's like being in high altitude. I don't know how we can breathe, but we can breathe.
Stunned, Birchinal and Pettengill raise their visors. Birchinal pulls the retractable helmet back over his head.
We can breathe!
Gallagher grins joyously. Birchinal.
I don't know what the hell this is, but I'll take it.
Elated, Gallagher rolls onto his back. Pettengill sits with his back to the other two. He pushes the helmet back over his head.
This can't be possible. What the hell is going on here? Sand.
Just wait a few more minutes. We can breathe, Santon. We can breathe.
Pettengill's distraught. On Mars 1...
Attention, Commander. Incoming relay.
Mars 1, this is Houston. We got your message and we're glad to hear your voice. Analysis of your telemetry indicates Mars 1 orbital failure in 31 hours. The good news is we'll have you out of there by then. We believe we can restore engine function for a main engine burn and exit from Mars orbit. Ground crew is presumed end of mission. Houston out.
At the remains of Hab...
Terraforming didn't even come close to creating breathable air up here. Right?
Right.
And the oxygen levels were already dropping when all the sensors died. So how can there be more O2 now than ever before? And no algae to make it? Huh?
On the Mars 1 flight deck.
Sorry, Commander. No response from ignition systems.
Bowman pulls out a drawer-like console containing transparent circuit panels which glow greeny-yellow.
Houston, Mars 1. No joy in all scenarios for engine ignition. That includes hitting the console. What next, over? Thank God, I wish I didn't have to wait 40 minutes to hear your answer.
Gallagher.
Hey, guys. His radio.
It's completely mangled.
I could be calling Bowman on this.
Wait a second. I saw something when we were trying to locate Hab. That little rover they sent up here back in 97. That must have a radio, right?
Yeah?
Hang on. It's 4 kilometers from here.
Gonna get dark real soon. It'll be too cold.
We'll go first light.
It's night.
But at least this thing still has enough rocket fuel to keep us warm.
Here comes a billion-dollar campfire.
Gallagher lights a mini blow lamp.
This is good for something.
He tosses the blow lamp into Hab. Flames shoot up high. Gallagher flexes his shoulders, enjoying the injection of heat. Virginal smiles warmly. Meanwhile, robot Amy is approaching the source of the flames. At Hab, Pettengill sits wrapped in a piece of reflective silver material.
If the radio at the rover works, we can contact Bowman. Tell us there's breathable air here.
Gallagher looks at Pettengill.
But that isn't going to help us, is it?
Birchinal.
Hey, Pettengill. Must have been hard watching Santon go like that, huh?
Pettengill eyeballs him.
Yes, it was.
Birchinal nods with narrowed eyes.
I bet.
Gallagher looks away, deep in contemplation. Amy pads up to Hab. Gallagher, then Birchinal look round. She's in navigation mode.
Hey, she got her. She made it.
Hey, Amy. I thought you were dead.
Hey, sweetie. Good to see you.
Ah, you're kind of banged up. Knew you'd make it. Hey, are you a little out of whack? Flip over for me.
Amy dips her head, then her rear legs step over her front legs so that she's now facing in the opposite direction. A panel on her main body slides back.
Shoot, the processor's damaged.
Can she still navigate for us?
Yeah, until she breaks down for good.
We wait till she breaks down. The drone will crash. Let's just yank your Mars positioning system now.
MPS hard drive's modular. It's self-powered. We can run it through an HHC. That would give us control of the drone, but then that'd be killing her.
Yeah? You want me to do it?
No, I'll do it.
Amy's internal camera screen switches from green to red, military mode. She thrusts out a leg and kicks Birchinal, then knocks back the other two. She stands tall on two legs.
Amy!
Amy spins round and Gallagher goes for her damaged control panel. She picks him up and launches him through the air.
Amy!
Birchinal whacks Amy on the back with a metal bar and she spins round. Virginal retreats and she steps with him, chopping down the bar bit by bit with her sharp, spinning claws. Amy grabs Virginal by the throat and shoves him onto the ground. Amy sinks onto her haunches and stalks towards Virginal, who scuttles backwards.
Amy! No!
Amy catches up with Virginal and looms over him. She seizes his spacesuit and thumps him against the ground. In X-ray mode, she locates his ribcage. His eyes bulge.
No!
Amy stands up on two legs, then drops down low on all four limbs before running hard at Gallagher, now on his feet. She leaps right over him and keeps going. Pettengill gets up.
Gallagher, what's going on?
She's in military mode. Crash must have flipped her.
Why did she turn on us?
Tried to kill her. Made us the enemy.
Son of a bitch.
You okay?
Then override her.
That's right, she won't respond.
Pettengill takes out a scanning screen and passes it over Birchenell.
It's a broken rib.
Oh, tell me something I don't know. Like, why she let us live? She had us.
She's playing war games. Guerrilla tactics. It's an old trick. Wound one of the enemy, the others have to help out. Slows them down.
They help Birchenell up.
Sooner or later, she'll play search and destroy. And she'll come and kill us. One by one. Right.
Amy is running away from Hab. Her twin propeller drone flies up to her. Amy has slowed to a walking pace and the drone lands on her back. At Hab, a few last flames burn inside the tower. The men lie out amongst the debris under sheets of reflective material. Gallagher studies the screen on the arm of his glove.
Amy's jammed the transmitter so we won't know where she is.
The screen is grey and fuzzy. Pettengill lies on his back, staring up pensively into the night. Birchenell glances at Gallagher and frowns.
You all right?
Birchenell smiles to himself.
Only hurts when I breathe.
He lifts his eyes.
Sun's gonna come up soon.
Might as well get going.
Give me a hand.
Gallagher, who like the others has his surname written across the chest of his spacesuit, gets up to help his companion. A dim, browny-orange light glows just above the horizon, silhouetting the dark skeletal remains of Hab. In pale reddish daylight, the men strike out from the base. Gallagher shivers, as does Birchenell. The three men stand equal distance apart and pee.
Whoa! Sure gets some high arc in this low gravity, huh?
Gallagher yawns.
I'm watching this, Amy. Taking the first piss on Mars.
Above Mars, the sun peeps round the curved surface of the planet, casting its light over Mars 1. Inside, Bowman sits by a computer terminal.
Boosters online.
In a trance, Bowman snaps out of it and rubs her face. She then writes on a board and flips switches.
AMI confirmed.
Bowman writes something on the transparent board, then stands up and flicks a series of switches on a panel overhead. The glowing dials, which indicate the ship's power status, turn round, changing from red to green. A small round display next to the dial panel lights up green, showing the transfer of power.
Ignition system operable. Awaiting burn instructions.
Houston, I have a green light for engine ignition. I repeat, I'm a go for engine ignition. Thank you, guys. Thank you for busting your asses.
Most of the flight deck systems appear to be operational.
I have some time before I have to punch. I'm gonna take another look for the crew at daybreak. Another end of mission, but it's something I gotta do. Over.
Relay.
On Mars, the men have found a robot buggy.
Birchenell, you know what you're doing, right?
I always know what I'm doing.
Screws are removed using power screwdrivers and the flat lid of the buggy lifted off. The three of them lean over and blow into the buggy. They get dust in their eyes and recoil.
Charming. It's a 50-year-old off-the-shelf computer modem. The frequency we're not using on our mission, but beat shouting for help.
More screws are removed and Birchenell takes out a circuit board.
I got it.
He puts it down to one side, then takes out another screw. Birchenell yanks out another piece of internal equipment and shakes the sand from it. On Mars 1...
Synchronous lock. L2.3. C-clock off. 144X. H-Z-lock.
Bowman uses the touchscreen to view Hab. She shakes her head, then sends the screen up into the ceiling.
Houston, Mars 1. I'm configuring Mars 1 for a final slingshot around the day side, and I will be returning to Earth.
Relay.
On the red planet, Gallagher and Birchenell are working on the buggy.
Let's do it.
Pettengill stands close by on guard. Gallagher solders two wires together on a crude device that he and Virginal have constructed from buggy parts. One side of the device consists of a solar panel which Virginal holds up to catch the light.
Test, test.
Does it work?
Yeah, I don't know, the little green light's on.
Houston, Mars One, I've acquired elliptical orbit. I'm commencing engine ignition sequence for Earth return.
On Mars, Gallagher speaks into a tiny receiver.
This is Mars One ground crew, do you copy? This is Mars One ground crew, do you copy? This is Mars One ground crew, do you copy? Hello, we're the guys on Mars.
Come on, someone talk to us.
Let's try it again.
This is Mars One ground crew, do you copy? This is Mars One ground crew, do you copy?
Maybe they'll hear us back in 1997.
Later, Pettengill is lobbing small stones at the Mars robot buggy.
It's been 2 hours.
Mars One, Houston. Mars One, Houston. Commander, we picked something off a radio telescope pointed in your direction. You're not going to believe this. You're going to have to tune to a frequency we haven't used in 50 years.
Yeah, well, it's worth a shot.
Gallagher winds the receiver wire around the solar panel's radio and prepares to get rid of it. He stoops over and holds the device with both hands behind him, then leans back and throws. Gallagher grabs the wire and hauls the radio back.
Bowman! Bowman!
Gallagher?
Bowman smiles.
You're alive.
Yeah. Holy shit, you made it too.
I know that Hav is wrecked. What is your status?
We're down here at the little rover, what's its name, and I'm with Birchill and Pettengill.
Got no food and water. Amy's gone Mustang. And, we can breathe.
Bowman's baffled.
How can that be? The oxygen levels are... That is impossible.
I don't know.
But we're doing it.
I saw a body back at Mev. Who was it?
I was Chantillis. Santin's gone too.
What happened?
Pettengill says he threw himself off a cliff.
Anyway, that's the news. We're not gonna make it much longer.
I hope you got an idea, because we're fresh out.
Okay, well, let me work on it. I'll get back to you.
I hope she has a magic wand.
On Mars One.
Houston, we have 3 men alive and breathing on Mars. Let's bring them home.
You just can't get around it, can you?
I still can't figure out this algae and oxygen business.
You hate not knowing, don't you?
Oh, given time, believe me, I'll know.
Yeah, maybe. But maybe life's just more mysterious than you think it is.
You know, you spent too much time with Chantillis. But if you want to take the God route, the easy way, that's up to you.
The easy way? There's nothing easy about a spiritual life. It's a lot more difficult than... just being intelligent.
I think you're just ignoring the facts.
The facts? Bet you're no fun at Christmas. Bet your mom told you there's no tooth fairy when you were 4.
I'm a geneticist. I write code, okay? A, G, T, P, in different combinations. Hacking the human genome, okay? I choose what, I choose where, and either your kidneys work or you grow a 6-finger. I do that. Now, you spot God, you let me know. Until then, I'll trust my PhDs.
On the Mars One flight deck, the touchscreen map drops down and turns itself on. Bowman talks to Gallagher on Mars.
Hey, it might sound crazy, but it's the only choice you got.
We walk 100 kilometers to a 30-year-old Russian rock probe that failed to launch and try to jumpstart it. Gee, why couldn't you make it tough?
The probe's called Cosmos. Houston found the designer named Borokovsky. Owns a deli in Brooklyn. He thinks that you can start the launch sequence right there on the site.
Former rocket scientist who now specializes in making sandwiches. Terrific.
Well, here's the hard part. You got just under 19 hours to get there and get it off the ground.
Oh, well then, I take back what I said about it being tough.
Okay, I gotta ditch the B tank and burn more fuel from A just to hold orbit that long. I can't burn much after that, or Mars One won't have enough fuel to get back home.
Okay, I need a... heading. Which way should I go?
Okay, you want to go to your 5 o'clock?
Gallagher turns. Bowman studies the touchscreen.
There you go.
Okay, we're set.
Okay, I got some work to do, and then I will be in blackout on the dark side, so I'll call you when I get back.
Roger, thanks.
Hey, I'm sorry it's not more.
Hey, it's something.
Give me a hand.
It's nice just to know you're still up there.
Yeah, well, I don't mind dying. I just hate being alone, so... Your ass is back. Talk to you later.
Thanks. It feels like it's through my lung.
Gallagher, what do you think?
I think it's very distracting seeing it get out of the shower.
I started to lock the door after that.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Bowman remembers being face-to-face with Gallagher. She's leaning against a wall and he stands close to her. He leans in slowly to kiss her, then hesitates. Bowman drops her chin and turns away. She looks him in the eyes, then leaves the room.
Good night.
Gallagher is left standing alone, reflecting on what he might have done wrong. On Mars One, in the present, Bowman reminisces. On planet Mars, Amy creeps up over red rocks. She peers over the top of a ridge at the three remaining crewmen, who are trudging across an expanse of virgin sand, leaving footprints in their wake. The men head up onto a hillock where rocks jut out of the rich red-brown sand. At the top of the hillock, Pettingill points at a distant dry valley.
What's that? Over there. It's like the ground's moving.
I didn't see anything.
Gone now, but I definitely saw something.
The trio plods on across the sand. A long way off, small creatures like hermit crabs start to move.
Gallagher?
Hey, Bowman. How you doing? I need a heading check.
You're right on target. Listen, I need to talk to you.
Gallagher presses a button on his glove arm.
I have to calm off. What's the matter? Bowman?
The only place to ride the cosmos is in the rock sample container.
Sounds comfy.
It's very small. Boroskoski and Houston have been trying to figure out how to cram three people in, and it only fits two people. Two people barely.
How we doing?
Good, great.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Gallagher stares intensely into the middle distance. Uneasy Bowman rubs the back of her neck. Gallagher wraps tape around Birchinal's chest.
Just patch up. It'll help with the pain.
Pettingill observes from a distance.
I can barely breathe. His ass to damn thin.
You'll be okay.
Jump over.
Gallagher supports him.
Left foot. Right foot. Up like a bunny, just go. Here comes your 19th nervous breakdown. What are you doing? It's the song my grandfather sang, Rolling Stones. Come on, sing it. Here comes your 19th nervous breakdown.
Birchinal has an arm round Gallagher's shoulder and staggers alongside him, wincing in pain. The red light of day fades to dull grey. A line of heavy clouds drifts over mountainous terrain, lightning jabbing at the earth. Flecks of snow dart through the air. The crewmen are scrabbling over rocks. On the Mars One flight deck, Bowman is flicking switches on an overhead panel. The touch screen lights up.
Commander, a massive low pressure system is approaching the crew. Atmospheric pressure 820 millibars.
Gentlemen, there's an ice storm coming straight for you, and it's big. It's the size of Montana, and it's moving fast. I'm going into calm blackout in a few seconds. You need to find shelter immediately, now.
The men are battling against driving winds.
Where are we going to find shelter around here? Over here! There's an opening!
They go to it.
Maximum sustained winds, 111 miles per hour. Temperature, negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
On Mars, the men have gathered at an opening at the base of a slope.
Hurry!
Snow is starting to cover the slope. The men squeeze one by one through the opening. Inside a small cave, they catch their breath. Their faces are red from the cold.
Houston, this is Mars One.
The mothership slips behind the smoothly arcing curvature of the red planet. The sun burns white in the star-spattered sky. In the cave, Pettengill is hastily building a wall of rocks to shore up the entrance. Outside, mist and snow sweep over the ground. Amy is on the prowl. Her screen reads minus 51 degrees Fahrenheit. Back in the cave...
How far is Cosmos from here?
Birchinal nudges Gallagher.
What? Hey, Cosmos. How far do you think it is?
5 or 6 hours. Say 5.
That leaves us 4 hours to try and launch. Not counting whatever time we lose here. This Borkowski better have a good memory. There'll be time for Plan B.
Pettengill casts a wary glance at his two companions. Meanwhile, outside, Amy is clawing her way up a steep slope, snow being driven against her by the high wind. On a ridge, she stops and, using a heat sensor, locates the three men in the cave. The force of the wind causes her to slide back on her feet. She digs in with her claws, but to no effect, then takes a few steps forward before shrinking into a ball, overcome by the extreme conditions. In the cave, Gallagher slouches on his back, deep in thought. His face is blotchy and red, as if burnt.
Only two of us can go on Cosmos.
Pettengill looks round. Birchinal frowns.
What?
There's only room on Cosmos for two people. You two will both go. You're carrying with the mission. You tell people what they need to know about what you learned here, and... we'll get to Cosmos, I'll help you rig it, and then, say goodbye.
His eyes watering, Pettengill breathes a fearful sigh and swallows.
Probably won't even launch. It is Russian, after all. I'll get 10 feet off the ground and explode, and I'll still live longer than both of you.
You're a rare man, Gallagher. But somehow I don't quite believe it.
What are you talking about?
He thinks I'm responsible for Santin's death. What do you think, Gallagher? Gallagher? You trust me? Do you? I'll watch your back, you watch mine.
I know I don't trust you.
Birchinal looks unforgivingly at Pettengill, then turns away and lifts his chin self-righteously.
But you're gonna leave your buddy here, behind, and take off with me?
Yes, that's what he's gonna do.
Pettengill nods with a cynical smirk on his lips, then shoots a glance at Birchinal, who remains aloof. Bowman's growing impatient.
Mars One, this is Houston. Commander, we don't know about your clock, but ours is running out of time down here. Your team's been out of contact over 3 hours. They did a great job getting this far, but it's a killer storm and no one can survive it out in the open. So here's where we are. If you haven't heard from your crew by the time you receive this, you're ordered to return home. Houston out.
Bowman bows her head.
Gallagher, come in. Gallagher, can you hear me, please?
In the cave, water drips from the coarse grey roof onto Gallagher's head. He looks up and touches his forehead with his hand, then looks around.
Birchinal! Oh, he's gone!
What?
He took the radio.
Pettengill's running across flat terrain. He peers up. On Gallagher's glove arm screen...
It's Amy.
Watch.
Out in the dark, thin patches of mist cling to the ground. Pettengill jogs on. Amy, still in military mode, spies on the runaway from behind some rocks. Pettengill halts and searches round, unsure in which direction to head. Thin strips on his spacesuit glow blue. In the cave, Gallagher and Birchinal watch on the Amy screen as Pettengill staggers about aimlessly. Amy has moved closer to her target and is still watching him. Unaware of her presence, Pettengill starts to run. Pettengill slows to a stop and closes his eyes in desperation. He turns round and Amy charges towards him at full pelt, knocking him to the ground.
Got him.
In the cave, Gallagher and a shivering Birchinal watch on the screen as Amy viciously sets about Pettingill. Gallagher closes his eyes, unable to watch.
He was afraid we were going to leave him here. He made it come true. Gotta get that radio. We're both dead too.
Later, they're on the move, tracking Pettingill's footprints using green torchlights.
We lost 3 hours in the snow cave.
Well, these Pettingill's heading in the right direction.
How do you know?
It took a general heading before the storm got too bad and lined up with the stars. We're okay.
Under a roof of twinkling stars, the two men set out again, Birchinal hobbling slightly. Gallagher pulls Birchinal over a hummock.
Hey.
On the other side of the hummock lies a bed of steaming green moss-like substance.
Hold on.
Birchinal goes down on one knee and gathers up a fistful. He holds the substance up to a torch beam which is shining out from a panel on his spacesuit.
This is algae. This algae here. Why is it here and nowhere else?
Birchinal looks around. Ahead, a green torch beam shines up into the blackness.
Time for that now. Where's Pettingill?
Gallagher plods off and Birchinal follows, limping as he goes. They trot through a haze of mist to where Pettingill lies dead on his back, his green torch beam shining out from his spacesuit and his helmet visor down. His mouth is clamped open and he's clutching the radio.
At least he didn't drop the goddamn radio.
They kneel down.
Amy, they tore him up.
Gallagher attempts to prise the radio from Pettingill's rigid hands. Behind the dead man's visor, a small creature crawls into his mouth.
Well, shit's got a death grip on it. Give me the radio!
Birchinal rips the device from Pettingill's grasp.
How about me?
Why'd he close his visor? He didn't have any air left.
Birchinal leans down and puts his ear over the visor. Inside, a bug-like creature crawls out through Pettingill's cheek, then re-enters through his nose. Birchinal frowns in puzzlement, then sits up and takes out a mini blow lamp. A little way off, Gallagher radios in.
Bowie, it's Gallagher, you up there?
Birchinal uses the blow lamp to burn into the visor, which is spattered with blood on the inside.
I'll still be on the dark side.
Pettingill's helmet is now full of bugs, which ignite and shoot through the visor. Birchinal topples backwards. Gallagher spins round. Glowing bugs burst out of Pettingill's body like fireworks. Birchinal looks round and spots one of the bugs on some algae.
Some kind of nematode. Sparks ignited them. They're feeding on the algae.
He takes out a tube.
That's where it went. They're feeding on the algae. Come on, son of a bitch.
He sucks two bugs into the specimen tube.
I thought there wasn't any life here. I was wrong. What? But there's water and air, there's life.
Oh. You're so smart to take those things with us.
Smart? You don't get how important this is, huh?
I'm the janitor, remember?
Hey, Earth's losing oxygen. You see how those things burn? They make it. They eat algae and they make O2.
I finally get it. I told you I'd solve this damn thing. Why are the nematodes here?
Because there's something left to eat.
The men cross ground, which is carpeted in lush green algae. Later, they climb up onto a bare earth hummock.
Hang on.
They survey their surroundings. Gallagher grins like an excited child.
I haven't seen green fields like this since I was a kid.
He stands gazing out over an immense sea of bright green algae. Mist hangs over their spongy forest and floats in layers high up in the thin night air. Beyond it, the inky blackness of space. Delighted, Gallagher tramps off along the ridge of the hummock. Looking much less impressed by it all, Birchinal heads off after his companion. They come down a slope and onto the algae. Birchinal stops and frowns and touches his lip. It's bleeding. Thousands of bugs congregate at Birchinal's boots. Blood drips from the fingertips of his gloves onto the algae. The bugs taste the blood and swarm over him. Grimacing, he drops to his knees.
Gallagher!
Gallagher whirls round.
Birchinal, you're eating through my suit!
Gallagher races over.
Stay there!
Birchinal lobs his breastplate to Gallagher.
You need my air for the launch!
The specimen tube.
Take this back, Gallagher.
Gallagher catches it.
Accomplish the mission. It's up to you now. Better put your helmet on. I'm not going out like Pet and Gil.
Gallagher stands on bare earth, his helmet and visor move into place. Virginal drops a lighted blow lamp. The device explodes, sending out a wave of fire. Gallagher's protected by his suit.
Commander, there is a disturbance on the surface of Mars.
Bowman comes to the touchscreen and sees a ring of fire. On Mars, the ground is red hot.
Oh, God.
Mars ground crew, this is Mars 1. Can you hear me? Over. Mars ground crew, this is Mars 1. Do you copy? Over. I'm Gallagher, what's going on? What's happened? Mars ground crew, this is Mars 1. Can you hear me? Over.
Gallagher drops to his knees. Commander Bowman wears a look of introspection.
I can't go back. There's some kind of oxygen burn-off. It's like a blowtorch. Virginal's gone.
Gallagher?
He sacrificed himself.
Gallagher, where are the others?
Got a rest.
Gallagher. Where are the other guys?
Dead. We're all dead.
I'm the only one left.
Gallagher, stop and listen to me.
It's over.
I don't know what happened tonight, but you have come too far to give up now.
You are going to accomplish the mission.
I can't.
Virginal sacrificed himself for you. You don't want to make that for nothing, do you?
I want you to stand up, and I want you to start walking.
Gallagher tips his head back.
If you can't do it for him, Gallagher.
I can't.
Do it for me.
Do it for me.
You have to keep going.
Okay.
His teeth bared in a grimace and brow knitted with exhaustion, Gallagher nods his head, then hoists himself to his feet. Bowman nods almost imperceptibly. Gallagher treks across the Martian surface, then dumping Birchinald's breastplate, breaks into a run. He looks up into the darkness. Ahead of him, Amy's drone whirs through the air. On Mars 1, an anxious Bowman rubs a hand over her head.
55 minutes until we need to leave orbit, Commander.
Gallagher scrabbles down a sandy slope and jogs on.
Be there by now.
You're almost there.
I could have screwed up the celestial nav. Could be off course.
Trust me, you're there.
I'm gonna run right past it.
Shut up and keep moving.
Gallagher does as he's told. Running up a steep incline, he falls forward, then crawls on his hands and knees to a narrow ridge at the top. Beyond the ridge, there's a sunken crater with a space module sitting at its center. Gallagher falls to his knees and gawps.
Found it.
Commander Bowman breathes a guarded sigh of relief. Gallagher strides purposefully up to the Russian module, Cosmos, which has four long, slender legs planted into the earth to maintain stability.
Okay. What do I do now?
Get rid of the sample return tray.
Gallagher reaches up and presses something, causing two metal flaps to snap shut. He then pulls a long box with yellow and black hatching on it out from the side of Cosmos.
Okay, what next?
There's an infrared maintenance port. It should be marked.
Marked? Yeah.
In Russian.
Gallagher thumps a panel which opens, revealing a control box.
All right. I got it. Now what?
Connect the radio to Cosmos. I'm going to download what you need through the modem.
Gallagher pulls a red battery-like device out of the control box and connects wires leading from it to the radio. A small screen in the control box boots up.
It's the asteroid.
Still works.
There's a talking cosmonaut bear character in one corner of the screen. Bowman activates the modem and download program.
Go.
This is the one that you have chained you down with.
The bear character gives instructions.
Okay, you should be able to run diagnostics now.
Запускается работа души.
Gallagher clambers onto Cosmos. A command capsule sits on the top. There, he finds a similar-looking screen.
All green.
Okay, now this thing has two settings, on and off. Right now, On sends it all the way back to Earth. As you lack air, food, and water, that would be bad. We want just enough power to reach orbit. I've recalculated for the weight of one person. You got to take 2 liters out of each fuel tank. There's a central purge.
Gallagher searches for it.
Russians couldn't add a gas gauge.
Hey, I'm going into comm blackout soon, and we're down to 49 minutes, so shut up and get to work.
Gallagher obeys the order. He collects the steaming fuel in a canister, which he sets down against a rock.
Okay, what now?
Launch diagnostics, avoid pressing anything that says ignition.
Gallagher reaches up to the screen and presses some buttons. The bear character taps his foot. A battery symbol flashes green, then red, and is joined by flashing red Russian words. The bear character is now in tears.
Gallagher?
Gallagher stares at the screen in dismay.
Barry's dead.
Bowman closes her eyes.
Gallagher.
She looks down and ponders.
There's not enough power to launch. Not enough power to launch.
Is there anything else there that you can use?
I don't know.
Let me look around, see if I see any alternate high voltage sources. No? It's just rocks.
Gallagher slumps down against the side of Cosmos, a look of defeat on his tired red face.
I'm gonna die on this planet.
I'm gonna figure out how to stay up here, and we will find another way.
You can't stay there without burning more fuel to hold orbit.
You gotta go.
Bowman has a gloomy countenance and seems at a loss for words. Gallagher's panting.
How much time till blackout?
About a minute.
Okay. There's a couple things I gotta tell you. There's life here on Mars.
One of the guys could figure out how they got here, but they ate the algae and...
They'd have to. The important thing is...
that, they make oxygen. Don't know how, but... Virchow said it might even
be able to save Earth, so... better get some guys up here quick. And, just tell them to be safe, because...
He nods stoically.
Need everything.
30 seconds, Commander.
Well, that's about it. I really hate this planet. I really miss Earth. I really miss a lot of things.
Gallagher looks up.
I'm gonna miss you.
Bowman looks sad and her eyes begin to water.
Aren't you gonna say anything?
Bowman swallows and presses her lips together. Gallagher breathes a weary sigh.
Should have kissed you.
Bowman nods. Mars One continues its orbit.
Comm frequency lost, Commander.
Bowman covers her face in sorrow. On Mars, Gallagher looks up and narrows his eyes, which have begun to glisten with unshed tears. He tries to smile, but can't quite seem to manage it.
Goodbye.
An aerial shot of Cosmos sitting on the bottom of the deep, dark crater. On Mars One, Commander Bowman sits in a chair on the flight deck, resting her head in her hands. The ship cruises effortlessly along on its solitary orbit. On the red planet, Gallagher has all but given up.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Here it comes.
His eyelids droop but don't quite close. He watches sleepily as Amy's drone whizzes past. His eyes follow it. Amy zooms over the rocky ground in military mode. Gallagher is sitting close to the discarded sample return tray. He leans back, deep in thought.
Alternate high voltage energy source. Come and get me. Let's do your battery, sweetie.
He pours the excess fuel from its container by the rock into an opening in the sample tray. He then clambers up to the top of Cosmos and removes a locking pin. He slides back down as the drone flies past. Gallagher removes the protective connectors from two sets of wires, leaving the wires bare. He sits leaning against the sample tray and twists the bare strands together. Amy hurtles to the lip of the crater. The robot looks down on Cosmos as Gallagher continues fiddling with the two strands of wires. Amy then moves away. Gallagher looks at the screen on his arm and sees what Amy sees as she lopes across the ground. The drone whizzes past. Gallagher sits back waiting, his brow pinched. He twists his head round to look behind and above him. He stares at the screen on his arm and the picture breaks up. He begins to move his head quickly and anxiously. His eyes return to the small screen, but there is only interference. Around him all is still and quiet. An eerie mist hangs in the crater. Suddenly, Amy's head appears in front of Gallagher's face. The robot's camera eye studies his face, the image flipping over from an inverted position. The machine itself rears up onto its back legs, lifts up its front legs and whirls its claws, poised to lunge. The internal camera highlights Gallagher's lungs, and Amy swoops down on him. He rolls away and joins the two live cables together. The fuel in the sample tray ignites and the cover is blown off, hurtling Amy away from Gallagher. Attached to it is a silver parachute which billows out and lands on top of the robot, trapping her.
Bye, sweetie.
Another cable spark ignites the parachute's cords and flames shoot across to engulf the robot. As flames light up the dark Martian night, the robot struggles to be free of its burning shroud. Gallagher screws up his eyes and watches. Gallagher gets to his feet and strides over to the now twitching robot, which behaves like a creature in the throes of death. As he approaches with a pick, its screen reads, "Activating auto-destruct mode." As he struggles to remove its power source, Gallagher is aware of the drone still flying around. He extracts what he wanted as the drone plunges onto Amy. Amy and the drone explode like a massive firework in a spectacle of sparks and light. Gallagher is thrown off his feet. Gallagher rolls over and holds out the high-voltage battery he extracted from Amy.
I'm going home.
On the flight deck of Mars One, Bowman activates overhead switches as on the surface Cosmos powers up. The friendly cartoon bear waves.
Get off, Kazam.
Gallagher straps himself into the command capsule. He plugs in Amy's battery. The engines ignite and Cosmos lifts off from the crater in a cloud of dust. Gallagher's teeth are gritted and his face contorts as he shoots up into the sky. The mushroom-shaped craft charges through the stratosphere, white light trailing behind it as if it were a comet hurtling through the skies. Pieces of it start to break away from the top of the capsule, behind which Gallagher is seated, exposing them to the elements. The base of Cosmos is jettisoned and the capsule rockets on. As Cosmos and Gallagher continue upwards, Bowman is still on the flight deck of Mars One.
Warning. Object interorbital path.
Oh my god, Gallagher.
She sees him coming.
Abort! Reroute, orbital maneuvering, I need pitch, roll! Yaw! 10 milliliter burst!
Small booster rockets on Mars One fire and it slowly turns. Cosmos uses up the last of its fuel. Gallagher gasps for breath as Cosmos floats in the starry sky towards Mars One. his oxygen reserves are exhausted. The door to the extravehicular activity suit room on board Mars One opens.
Seal this level.
Bowman is suited up.
Level sealed.
Bowman picks up a piece of equipment and stands on a mobile platform.
Open the dock.
The docking doors open like flower petals and Bowman can see Cosmos dead ahead. She shines a red beam of light into the capsule. It's aimed at the unconscious Gallagher and appears to scan him.
Target at altitude 0.3 kilometers. We only have 5 minutes before Mars One leaves orbit, Commander.
Hook me up, Lucille! Light release! Full velocity!
Bowman is jettisoned from Mars One and she shoots across the kilometers separating the two space vehicles. Behind her, a connecting cable attached to the mothership. Beneath her, the red planet. She moves ever closer to the relatively tiny Cosmos until she can cling to it. She turns the Cosmos capsule round.
Gallagher! Gallagher!
There are no vital signs from Gallagher, and there are spots of blood inside his helmet.
Retract!
She grasps hold of Cosmos, and her ship's computer instigates the retract order and pulls her back on the connecting cable towards Mars One. As she nears the docking doors, Bowman turns to face Mars One. Cosmos clatters in through the open doors and scrapes along the bulkhead until it crashes to a halt. Inside Cosmos, Gallagher sways like a rag doll.
Seal emergency atmosphere now!
Bowman moves towards him.
Atmosphere restored.
She opens Gallagher's visor and helmet. Bowman removes her own helmet, then leans into Cosmos and starts to drag the now helmetless Gallagher out of it. In the low gravity, she tugs him across the ship, away from Cosmos.
Linking to suit computer. Gallagher's vital signs are negative. Bioscan indicates cardiac arrest.
Clamping herself onto the ship, she uses a cutting implement to break open Gallagher's spacesuit like a can opener. She rips open his shirt and places her gloved hands over his heart and starts pounding.
Come on. Come on!
Stand him up, Commander.
Come on.
Bowman easily lifts him to an upright position and they float up. Gallagher's head rocks back and forth as he slowly begins to come to. They're close to one another, Bowman with her arms round Gallagher. He moves his left hand to her shoulder.
Oh, man. Where's my office?
Their foreheads touch as they float in midair.
Let's go home, Lucille.
They hug each other tightly as Mars One moves slowly away from the planet below. Later, they examine the bugs that Gallagher brought on board.
Organism bioscan. DNA mapping.
Hard to believe they're the good guys. Do you think it was worth it?
Houston thinks so. On Earth, they're calling you a hero, Gallagher.
God works in mysterious ways.
In his hand, a rock from the red planet.
A memento?
Trish Antilles' granddaughter.
Bowman looks at him quizzically and half smiles.
Red face.
Gallagher clenches his fist round the rock and looks straight at Bowman. She smiles broadly, reaches out her hand and gently rubs his cheek. He moves his head towards hers.
You are not who I thought.
She shakes her head. They move closer to each other until their lips meet in a tender kiss.
Nothing went the way it was supposed to. But the team, mankind at its best and its worst, accomplished the mission. Maybe Chantelis was right. Maybe it isn't just the science. I sure don't know. But whatever forces were at work, we triumphed. And me? I've got 6 months before we get home. I guess I'll get to know the janitor.
The Red Planet sits center screen. ITFC audio description by Tom Woolley.